This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 36, for Monday, September 22nd, 2008. WPF, Vista Gadgets, and Unified Communications. In this episode, Larry sits down with George Dersey from Clarity Consulting to talk about a project that he did that's available up on CodePlex. The project combines Unified Communications, WPF, and Vista Gadgets in an interesting user experience. Be sure to check out the show notes for the show to lots of links, including one to the upcoming Moss Camp in Chicago on November 14th, 2008. Hey, this is Larry Clarkin, and I'm recording this podcast at the offices of Clarity Consulting in downtown Chicago. Got our old friend George Dersey here. George, can you say hello?
Hey, guys. How are you?
George, you're actually one of the very few alumni of Thirsty Developer Interviews.
This is my second time.
Yeah. It's been probably like 8 months since we had you on. Last time we were talking about Moss Camp,
which
was a social thing. I think that was episode 5, if anybody wants to go back and listen to George, you know, 8 months ago before he was jaded.
Yeah.
That was actually right before you joined Clarity.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So, and actually, I think you'd made your decision. You were, as I recall, you're very noncommittal about where you were at the time.
That's right.
But that was a blast. We'll have to do Moss Camp again this fall.
We should. The SharePoint seems like it's hotter than ever, and maybe we can get in some more advanced content, and definitely love to organize it and host it again.
Well, there you go. You signed up now.
I still own the URL, too, so.
Yeah. So folks, look for mosscamp.net coming soon.
Moss Camp returns.
Yes. Yeah. But actually, we're here today to talk about kind of an interesting technique. We're going to talk about three different technologies here, and we can talk about them individually and then talk about how you put them together. One is WPF, which is the Windows Presentation Foundation, which is the advanced graphics. Everybody's seen the great demos of that. Second, we're going to talk about Vista Gadgets,
okay?
Which I think a lot more people listening to the podcast are probably familiar with WPF than with Vista Gadgets.
Yeah.
After all, you know, they've only sold like 130 million copies of Vista, so not many people have seen that.
You have the weather gadget, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then finally, we're going to talk about UC, or Unified Communications.
Okay.
And UC is, well, I guess we'll get into that, but UC is probably the thing that the fewest people have heard of. That is, basically kind of a voice over IP software solution that's part of the Microsoft Office, you know, greater family.
Yeah.
It lets you do, you know, among other things, the simplest way to explain it is I can plug a headphone into my laptop and get all my phone calls, you know, via my laptop.
Exactly. You know. And some people, you know, implement voice over IP, some people don't, and just have the instant messaging, the live meeting integration. But we run it end to end here. So when you call me, I take the call on my computer just through a headset.
Yeah, it's actually part of the Office communicator.
Yes,
you know, product.
Exactly.
But you can actually you can do true voice over IP. You can integrate in with your PBX and all that.
Yeah.
You've done this really neat solution where you've kind of taken WPF and you've taken the Vista Gadget concept and UC.
Yeah.
And you've smashed them all together.
That's right.
And I've actually been your beta tester. You know, one of your beta testers
and
on this.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. It's funny that George sent me an IM message say, hey, could you test something for me? And you know, of course, violating every rule that you hear about internet security, I clicked on the link that he sent me and I installed it.
Well, you know, it's like to find somebody who's running OCS 2007 and Exchange 2007, it's still not very common, at least some people we know.
Well, and the key thing is that you had a lot of people internally at Clarity testing it. You wanted somebody who wasn't on your network
exactly.
In case you were running into something specific, like you'd hard-coded a URL.
I didn't want to put the, you know, it works on my computer badge on it, so
yeah.
I needed somebody else to take a look.
So this project that you've done is actually going to be available on CodePlex, right?
Yep.
And as we're recording this, it's not quite up there yet, so we don't have the exact URL. But check the show notes for the show, and you'll be able to download all of George's code and get it running in your machine and kind of pick apart what he did.
But there'll be some things to pick apart for sure.
Yeah. And actually, what's great about CodePlex is that if somebody sees something you've done that they can improve, they can actually contribute those changes back to CodePlex.
Absolutely.
But check the URL in the show notes. Right now, we're recording it as if it's out there, and it will be by the time we release the podcast. So let's talk about each one of the individual component technologies. And you want to start with WPF?
Okay. So the aspect of WPF we're using is actually XBAP, which is XAML browser applications. So when you're installing Visual Studio or when you have Visual Studio 08 or WPF extensions for Visual Studio 2005, you have a new project type. So you have an XBAP project. And an XBAP project is essentially a WPF project in a browser. Now, not all the functionality of WPF is available, and an XMAP project also runs in a tighter security context. But for the most part, the development experience is as if you were dealing in WPF.
Yeah, and there's a couple of features. So this is like you create a nice, good-looking Windows application. And it's just delivered via the browser. Yeah. Like you said, there are some things like the trust level by default is medium trust because it's coming over the internet, so you'd want a lower level of trust to it. The second thing that you get is like you don't get multi-window support, so it is kind of like a SDI-type interface.
Yeah.
And a couple other things to it, right? But you actually, the easiest way to do this is that you go to a URL and then the application fires up in the browser.
Exactly. So the context that it lives in is called the Internet Security Sandbox, and it's actually pretty well documented what you can and can't do. And when you read through that list, it it really makes sense why you shouldn't be able to do some of those things like registry access, file access, and things of that nature.
Yeah, because you don't want just a URL that comes from the internet to have that kind of control over your machine. Yeah. Now, there are some really good examples of this, like, another example other than yours that's available, right now is family.show from Vertigo, systems, Vertigo Systems, Vertigo Solutions, from Vertigo. That they've got an XP app. No, there's just click once. Sorry. Scratch all that.
We deploy that as click once, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you're ready to publish an XBAP solution, and here's the thing, usually you would access it via a URL, right? We had to package it inside a gadget, and we'll talk about how you package and deploy gadgets. So what we did is we published it as a click once application, and that has its own quirks when you want to work within gadgets, but it runs as a click once application.
Okay, so you're actually taking advantage of both technologies.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've written your user interface, nearly 100% of it in WPF.
Yep.
Now let's talk about a Vista gadget. Let's talk about it just the gadget by itself. Vista gadgets are a feature of Windows Vista,
yep.
Not to be confused with Windows Live gadgets, or any of the other 1,000 gadgets running around the internet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But on Vista, you get the little sidebar, and you get, by default, you get a clock, you get a stock ticker,
Picture viewer. Yeah. Yeah. Gadgets are pretty interesting because they are just like a .gadget file, which is a zip archive renamed. If you just change a .gadget file to a .zip file, you can look inside. So, gadgets can't be compiled, so any gadget you find that's a JavaScript gadget, which is the default way of developing gadgets, you can take a look at the code. There's a couple of things inside a gadget that make it interesting. There's a gadget.xml, which is the manifest. It tells you about the gadget, gives you the metadata that shows up in the sidebar gallery. It also tells you what the gadget's going to launch when it first starts. Then it has a default HTML file, which is basically the first page you see. And then it has, using some conventions, you have a background image to see in the gallery and other files you package up with the application.
Yeah, so a gadget by itself is just a little tiny HTML type application.
Exactly.
That's really standalone.
Yeah.
I mean, it can reach out, and hit things on the internet. But by itself, it should be standalone. And it's running in kind of a mini browser in that sidebar.exe. Process that's running on your machine.
That's exactly what it's doing.
Yep.
And when we were looking to build this gadget we're talking about, we saw some examples of people using XBAP in it and realized all they did was they iframed the XBAP application into that default HTML file. So I don't know if you'd call that unsupported or just being creative, but you basically can get anything into a gadget because all you're using is a browser and we just iframe it.
Yeah, I think we'd have to call the product team and ask them hey, do you guys support this? I think that we've seen Adam Kenny and some of the other technical evangelists talk about this
using Silverlight in the sidebar. Exactly.
I would just say, let's just call it clever and move on. Okay, so the last big piece of technology is UC, which we've talked about, is that's our voice over IP type communication solution. Now, in your actual implementation, because you've told me some about this, is that you're making a lot of calls to web services and you're actually calling some COM APIs.
Yeah, so we have a COM SDK that interacts with Office Communicator. And it was out of all the SDKs available for Office Communicator, it was the one that made most sense to use. So we had to make calls to that from our gadget.
Okay, and make sure everybody grasps this concept, because the SDK, out of the box, Unified Communication will give you integration with Instant Messenger, integration with your, you know, global access list, you know, from Exchange, give you all these great features. You can, you know, send and make phone calls.
Yeah.
You can, what's cool is that, you know, we're on a shared, communicator between Clarity and Microsoft because our Active Directory domains trust each other. So
yeah.
Right from there, I can see George Dersey in my IM list. I can right click and say, I want to call George via your phone, right through the communicator tool. That's stock functionality. But yep. The SDK allows you to build this into applications or specifically build applications for this.
Yes, this particular SDK allows you to, the way it's phrased is to automate an instance of communicator. So if I have communicator running, I can, from my custom program, initiate phone calls, see somebody's status, add them as a buddy. Everything you can do in the communicator UI, for the most part, you can access via the SDK.
And the real cool thing here is you can integrate it into the rest of your applications.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, so if I'm an inbound call center, you know, as I receive a call, if it gets routed to me, you know, via Hunt Group or however I'm doing it, I could actually make a call out to a database and get, you know, information about this customer as I'm receiving the call.
That's an excellent example. What people have done is it's a call center scenario, and you catch what's called the window created event, which is you receiving a message alert, and then you can see the contacts collection of that window, and one of them is a phone number. You can do a reverse lookup on that, see who the customer is, and pull them up in your program.
Yeah, and that's the real power here is that, you know, we start doing those kind of things. And so you took all three of these technologies and you smashed them together.
What we came up with is a gadget that shows contact presence of people that you assign, or allows you to add phone numbers as contacts. So one of the common things I do is I have our conference line as a contact, or my wife's cell phone, for example. So instead of like looking up her contact, right-clicking dial, selecting her cell phone, I can just double-click and I'll dial her right away, because we can treat people and just phone numbers as just different types of contacts.
So in your Vista gadget sitting in your sidebar, you know, you are sitting in your sidebar, you've got your custom Vista gadget.
Yeah.
And it's got these phone numbers that you've, you know, said, hey, these are my kind of hot contacts, right? And what's cool is that, you know, if it's me and you're on my contact list because I'm, you know, on a UC that's integrated with you,
yeah,
I can actually see your current status, whether you're away, you're busy, and all that.
Exactly.
If it's a phone number that's not on UC, like your wife's cell phone, you can actually get information about that anyway, you know, when there's an incoming call for that.
Yeah, and it's grayed out by default because it's not really a contact which has presence. But yeah, when the call rings, it associates it with her contact.
Why did you do this?
it was a demo project for a client in the UC group for TechEd.
Okay.
And mostly to kind of prove that we could integrate some of the communicator functionality. Now, when we were approached to do this, by default, we assumed it would be a traditional gadget, which was with JavaScript. But, you know, there's a few problems with that. So, other than the fact that I hate JavaScript.
Oh, come on, George. JavaScript's not that bad.
It makes me nervous. The programming model, as far as interacting with a COM SDK, was very restricted. Only about 5% of the functionality was exposed if we wanted to call this SDK from JavaScript. And the other thing is we didn't have a good debugging experience if we wanted to test this. Every time we'd have to test the gadget, we'd either maybe have to run it as a web application and then do some trickery to deploy it as a gadget, or, you know, do some JavaScript alerts everywhere.
Yeah, I will give you this from a JavaScript standpoint. JavaScript, when you can attach to the browser process,
yeah,
you know, especially with Visual Studio 2008 and its JavaScript debugging capabilities, fantastic.
Yep.
Offer does not apply to the process running inside the sidebar. It's
exactly.
It's not quite the same because if you can't set a breakpoint, for instance,
yep.
Right? By the way, I'm the king of message box alerts in JavaScript. I actually have a script that goes through your JavaScript file and inserts every other line as an alert.
I'm here.
Yeah. it actually grabs the previous line and says, all right, you know, I am at, you
yeah.
know, X plus one.
Yeah.
Equal, you know. I've got that if you ever need to borrow it. So
I try to avoid JavaScript projects.
So yeah, okay. So the whole project was a reference application that you were doing for the UC group, so
yeah.
You could demo something at TechEd. And you looked at, you know, the traditional gadget and you said, wow, there's some deficiencies here.
Yeah.
Part of the thing is the lack of the COM API for the SDK is probably one of them.
That was the biggest part. We really couldn't do anything useful with the COM SDK. yeah. if we use JavaScript.
Now, there are some web services, you know, for UC that you can call, right?
That and there's another SDK that they call the Ajax SDK. And the way it works really is you make web service calls against the communicator web service to do the same things. It's not as cleanly wrapped as the, you know, what we call the automation SDKs. That one has a, you know, just a send IM method, for example. This one, you know, you're doing SOAP back and forth. So we could have done it that way. But we realized it would just be much less complicated the other way.
Well, one of the things that you get is the advanced presentation layout, you know, going through the XBAP.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so tell us about, because by default, XBAP runs in medium trust.
Yeah.
And by default, the gadget itself runs in medium trust. And This may be where we get to the unsupported part of the concept. But so, I know for a fact that com calls in medium trust are pretty much no.
Exactly. And it's also, we found out it was a certain type of com calls. So first thing we did was, well, I'll tell you about the issue we were having at first. On some machines, on some Vista machines, we could never get the gadget to run past the point where it first called the COM component. And what it turned out to be was COM components that are in the, I guess, what they refer to as a user-specific hierarchy in the registry, are not accessible if user account control is turned off. So it's kind of counterintuitive, restricting you from doing something if UAC is off. So I turned UAC on, and all of a sudden, the problem's gone.
So you don't run with UAC on?
No, I don't run with UAC.
Shame on you, George. Shame. I'm running a blog post about, you know, shame is you, you know, running with
shame
UAC off.
Shame me for running with UAC off.
Yes. I'm going to call you up by name now.
That's cool. But so that was fixed with Vista SP1.
That's like a security measure, right? It's like, you know, you don't want the comm calls happening, you know, unless there's something in there to say, hey, is this okay?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it took us a while to figure it out, and it was counterintuitive because, you know, you think you have a free-for-all if you have UAC off, but it turned out it wasn't. And we actually found it in, like, the Live Mesh blogs because Live Mesh, the client, won't install unless UAC is on, and they cited that specific reason, and it was exactly what we had going on.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And after some process monitor logs, we figured out where it was bonking and... Yeah, that was fun.
Okay, so that was one of the issues you ran into, but in general, you know, in medium trust, I can't make com calls if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, so we set the application because it's a click once application underneath. We set it to a full trust application.
And is this what you went with, the click once?
That really was our only option to deploy XBAP inside the gadget because the installation experience of a gadget, you know, there's no MSI. You just click the .gadget file and it puts it in your sidebar. So we just had to find a way for the gadget to run. And when you point the iframe at the initial .xbap, it runs the underlying ClickOnce application.
Okay. Yeah. So let me get the experience right, you know, just for the listeners. Or, you know, I've been through this, but you sent me a URL that was, you know, some, you know, web server location.
It was the link to the gadget.
It was the .gadget file.
Yeah.
.gadget is a registered MIME type on Vista, so it knew what to do with it.
It was actually a registered MIME type on the web server that
on the web server. Okay,
yeah.
So it sees the .gadget, it's got the right MIME type, and goes, okay, hey, it actually prompted me and said, you know, hey, this location is a gadget. Do you want to install it?
Yeah.
I can look at information about, like, you know, who created it, and it, you know, it said, you know, George or Clarity or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, when I click on it, it actually, by default, put it in my sidebar, but it was also available in my add gadgets dialog box.
Yeah, in the sidebar gallery, yeah.
So when it fired up, it's firing up a little web page, right, the default.html that you talked about in the gadget.xml. Does a click once happen then? Is that the default behavior?
Yeah, now, if you were just to run an XMAP application for the first time, like forget the gadget and everything, you'd see a progress bar saying, I'm loading this XBAP application. So the first time you actually loaded the gadget, you would see that inside the iframe. It was obviously very cropped. So, you know, there was like almost a white page inside the border. That only happens the first time. But that's when it's loading the ClickOnce application.
Yeah, and it happened very quick.
Yeah.
Because normally in an XBAP that's a hefty size XBAP, it's pulling the bits off of the internet. But because of the way the gadget deployed, I already had it local.
Yeah.
So it was loading the XBAP application, but it was quick because it was coming from the local machine.
Yeah. And all the files go into your I think it's called your user data directory, which is a hidden folder by default, and it just has a obfuscated name, and you can find all the gadget files in there from where they're running.
Yeah, there's actually a drill down that you can figure it out, you know, where it's at. So
yeah, there's obviously a couple of gotchas with this approach. The big thing we found was, take the weather gadget, for example. One of the default gadgets available in Vista. You can have 10 weather gadgets, each pointing to a different zip code, right?
Yep.
With the ClickOnce style of deployment, there's no concept of an identity of a ClickOnce application. So if I wanted to build our weather gadget in WPF and XBAP, the multiple running instances of the gadget can't tell themselves apart from each other. So there wouldn't be an elegant way to configure each one to basically talk to a separate config file.
Okay.
And that wasn't an issue specifically for our gadget, but we wanted to do some other functionality for another project, and that was the big limitation. We wanted to see if we could get by, and there just was no way.
So you almost treat it like a singleton. In the case of, you know, my UC setup, I don't have multiple UC, you know, identities, so that's not going to be an issue. I'm not going to be wanting to do that. But if you change the use case around, like the weather gadget, you'd want to be able to do that.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's something you got to keep in mind if you're going to create one of these.
Yeah.
You know, is the type of application you're doing.
And a couple other things. XMAP projects, by default, you can't open them in Blend. It's not a supported project type. So when we were working with that, what we had to do was kind of have a Windows application. Sorry, just a traditional WPF application version. That was what we did the design in. And then kind of just move this stuff over because XBAP projects aren't supported in Blend.
So did you have a designer on the project?
Yeah. Yeah. Eric at Clarity. He's the WPF ninja.
WPF ninja, yeah. Eric actually did the Thirsty Developer logo.
That's right.
So, good friend of the show. So we'll have to get him on the show at some point.
Definitely.
You know, we've talked about him so much. So
he did all the WPF heavy lifting.
Yeah. And there's, you know, it's interesting because it's kind of deceptive when you see the finished gadget. You think, well, there's probably not a lot of WPF work in here, but there is, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the – and that's the thing is you get a lot more control for how things look. So why not go all out, really?
Just, right.
You know, when you're able to take a look and download the gadget, just when you have it running the sidebar, just some really nice hover styles over the contacts, all these little touches that you, maybe you could do in HTML, but they'd be a lot more complex.
Well, fundamentally, if it looks like, you know, like HTML,
yeah,
why don't you just do it in HTML?
Exactly. Yeah.
why fight the learning curve and the True. You know and True. Get the benefit for the platform that you're doing?
And you know, when you get this running, when you open some of the config windows and see what's going on, I think it's obvious that it's WPF. They're just much smoother. There's just a much richer UI.
Yeah, the gadget, when you just blink at it, it looks like a really slick gadget.
Yeah,
but when you click on the other windows, let's talk about that for a second, because there are certain events that can happen, like when I click on the settings button of a gadget. Also, when I click on something in the gadget, I can create a flyout event.
Yeah. So the again, traditional gadgets they use a system.gadget namespace, which is a JavaScript namespace, and they have a flyout class. It enables you to create flyouts right out of the gadget, which they seem like they're attached to it and they expand out. We don't have that, so we have to actually spawn different windows out. So we just actually they're simply just WPF windows.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can choose whether or not to show stuff in the taskbar when you create the new window. So we have some control over that, because you know you really don't want to Alt Tab and see one of the configuration windows of your gadget sitting there.
So right, it would be kind of a wonky experience, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, one thing I also just realized is that if you the window has the default WPF icon in the top corner too, so
yeah.
It's obvious that it's a WPF window.
Yeah, the little looks like the hexagon with XML tags exactly. Around it. Yeah,
A couple of other little things. XBAP. So, like we said, it's not one-to-one functionality with WPF, right? We know it's limited, but there's also some things with regards to transparency. So, one of the use cases we had was to have a drop-down list in one of the config windows for some settings. So, you know, simple enough. You put a drop-down list on a page. I'd click the down arrow on the drop-down list. I don't see my items. Like, you know, what's going on? Posted on the XBAP boards and everything. Turns out it's like a transparency issue with this, like the Z index of the panel that the drop down list pushes down.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to change the experience to radio buttons to work around that. So there's some little things with XBAP, you know, what it's capable of doing.
Why is it the drop down list is always the bane of developers.
You know, let me put this in a drop-down
list. Because, you know, even an HTML drop-down list has the Z order index with all the controls.
That's right.
It shows up behind everything else. And so when you want to do something fancy, you actually have to hide the other controls on the page.
That's right. You don't see anybody with a drop-down list near their JavaScript flyout menus.
Oh, no. It just doesn't. Someday we're going to fix that. So.
I know, right? But I think that's it for as far as gotchas with building. I think it's you get the great development experience building in WPF, and you make things look better. But then again, it's a trade-off. You know, if something can be done in HTML, why not do it there?
Right. One of the things that I really like about the gadget as a concept, and I know there's other ways to do this. You know, so don't pound on us about it doesn't mean that you have to have Vista gadgets to do this. Is that I like applications that kind of like, I want them there.
Mm-hmm.
I want them, omnipresent, but I don't want, to have to do a lot of alt tabbing to do it.
Yeah.
And you talked about the alt tabbing with the config windows. With a gadget, I've always got my stock price there. I've always got my, whatever it is. I've got three or four favorite gadgets that I've got. They're always there. They're always omnipresent. They're always giving me information. But it's like a heads-up display, in a car or, in a video game if you're playing a first-person shooter, that you can always just glance over there and kind of see what's going on. But it's not kind of in your way.
Exactly. And a lot of people now are also running split screens or multiple monitors. So, for example, on my desktop, I have my sidebar on my right monitor. So when it used to take a lot of space, it just doesn't anymore. So I don't have to sacrifice not having it.
Right.
Yeah. Because I like the calendar up there to just, quickly know what day it is instead of going to date and time in the system and things like that.
Wow, George.
That's it's the weirdest thing. When I'm building a new PC, I'm like, okay, what gadgets do I want? Okay, I'll put Chicago weather. I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, I say, do I really need the calendar? No. I'm like, God damn it, what day is it? There goes the calendar.
Are you one of those guys that, finds yourself at work on the Saturday, and go, nope. God, why is there nobody else here?
Nobody here? On my couch at home, probably, but no.
Yeah. So, there's a certain set of, gadgets that you put up there, and it's the ones you like.
Or yeah.
Yeah. So where do you guys go from here with the UC gadget? You're going to put it up on CodePlex's reference application, and the community's free to, go pick apart your code and say, here's some improvements that you could do.
A couple of valuable kind of sub-projects came out of it. The first one, I think, which is something much more practical than people can actually use, is we built presence controls in WPF that we used in the gadget. And
and presence is the concept.
So they're, in Live Messenger, for example, just the colored bubbles that show, your status and allow you to communicate with the person.
Yeah, and one of the features of Office Communicators, you can do custom presence.
Exactly.
Right. So I can actually, instead of just saying, away, busy, do not disturb, I can actually say, urgent interruptions only as my status.
And you can choose that certain people can only see these things. For example, if you have me as a team level contact as opposed to an external contact, I could see that you're actually in a phone call, or if you were in a meeting, the title of your meeting. But if I was just an external contact, like, I would just see busy. Yeah. So it, like, presence is almost a combination of like availability and willingness. So, do not disturb, urgent interruptions only is you don't disturb me, but if it's really important, you can.
Right.
So it's a two-factor thing almost.
So what did you guys do with that?
The presence. So we built a set of presence controls in WPF that you can use in WPF applications. That's actually imminently going to be available on MSDN. It's going to be an official MSDN download.
Okay.
You can drop those right into WPF projects that integrate with Unified Communications to get the presence of your contacts and collaborate with them. And the other thing, which was a personal kind of interesting CodePlex project, is after using this SDK a few times, I realized I had to do a lot of plumbing to get it up and running, to get it connected to Communicator, to monitor the connection and react if the connection was lost, etc. So I built a wrapper around the Office Communicator SDK, and that's actually on CodePlex now. And we can put the link to it in the show notes too. It's if you're building an application that uses the Office Communicator SDK, it's a great way to get up and running because you can get started in a couple lines of code because I've implemented everything as a singleton. Can use it in different different parts of the same application.
So you went through the pain for everybody else.
I'm a martyr, aren't I?
Yeah. So can I scope creep on your overall project? Because have you seen the sideshow?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is it's the classic example that you saw is that, you know, it's a screen on the outside of the laptop. Yeah. They've got them for remote controls. As I understand it, there's some Windows Mobile type functionality.
Yeah.
It'd be great to be able to see, you know, some UC information kind of away from the main screen.
That's right, yeah.
And Sideshow gadgets are like sidebar gadgets, kind of kicked up a notch. There's some additional, you know, APIs because... Yeah. You know, because of where they're located and how they could be physically separated from the machine, it would be kind of cool to do that. So
I haven't seen an actual Sideshow device, but when Vista first came out, you know, all the pictures and stuff. But I think that'd be cool. It's because the typical use case is email,
and, right?
You know, why not do something a little more interesting?
Yeah, I know that you know, they're talking about Windows Media remotes.
Yeah,
because they have a screen of their own, being, you know, Sideshow capable, right? So nice. It'd be really good to, like, you know, if you're watching TV, you know, and your UC pops up on your not that we're watching TV at work, but
well, it depends what's playing, you know, like the Euro Cup a couple of months ago. We had to find some streaming channels to catch the games, but, you know,
and sometimes, you know, flat out you just got to do something because, you know, just to prove it can be done. So
exactly,
so maybe you should work on that.
Sounds like a fun project.
Yeah. Look at me giving you a bunch of stuff to do as opposed to, like, you know, volunteering to help you. You know, I should turn around and say, why don't you do it?
You should do this.
Any other final thoughts?
I don't think so. For the most part, I think it's an interesting approach. It'll be interesting to see if WPF and the sidebar becomes officially supported. I know there's some internal projects at Microsoft, but they're not. You know, ability to run WPF in the sidebar, but they're not supported. And I think if they do support it, it's going to be done differently because, you know, people just don't like JavaScript. I know I'm going to get flamed for that, but
I already flamed you, so get over it. Right.
That's right.
Yeah. But I think that it'll be interesting to see how that kind of evolves. But for right now, it's kind of, you know, an interesting technique. So
yeah.
And then check out your code on CodePlex.
Definitely.
Thanks for being on Thirsty Developer,
Thank
George.
You. Happy to be here again.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com.